Sutra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, a new commentary, Discourse Number 31, given in Bombay, India.
Tantra is not a philosophy. Rather, it is a science. With one difference. Science is objective. Tantra is subjective. But still, it is a science and not a philosophy. Philosophy thinks about the truth, the unknown, the ultimate. Science tries to discover what is. Science penetrates the immediate. Philosophy thinks of the ultimate. Philosophy is always looking towards the sky. Science is more down to earth. Tantra is not concerned with the ultimate. It is concerned with the immediate, the here and now. And Tantra says the ultimate is hidden in the immediate. So you need not worry about the ultimate. And by worrying about the ultimate, you will miss the immediate. And the ultimate is hidden in the immediate. So by thinking about the ultimate, you will miss both. The immediate should be missed, and because of the ultimate also. So philosophy is just a smoke. The approach of Tantra is scientific, but the object is different from so-called science. Science tries to understand the object, the objective world, the reality that is before your eyes. Tantra is the science of the reality that is behind your eyes, the subjectivity. But the approach is scientific. Tantra doesn't believe in thinking. It believes in experimenting, in experiencing. And unless you can experience, everything is just wastage of energy. I am reminded of one incident. Mullah Nasruddin was crossing a street. Just in front of a church, he was knocked by a hit and run driver. He was an old man. A crowd gathered, and someone was saying that a man cannot survive. So the priest of the church ran out, came near, and he found the old man is just going to die. So he prepared to administer the last rite. He came near and asked the dying mullah, "Do you believe in God the Father? Do you believe in God the Son? Do you believe in God the Holy Ghost?" So mullah opened his eyes and he says, "My God, I'm dying and he's asking me puzzles." Whole philosophy is like this, asking puzzles and you are dying. Every moment you are dying. Every moment everyone is on his deathbed, because death can occur any moment. And philosophy goes on asking and answering puzzles. Tantra says it is good for children to philosophize. Those who are wise will not waste their time in philosophy. They should try to know, not to think. Because through thinking there is no knowledge. Through thinking, you go on webbing words, creating patterns of words. It leads nowhere, you remain the same. No transformation, no new sight. The old mind goes on gathering dust. Knowing is a different phenomenon. It means not thinking about, it means going deep in existence itself to know, moving in existence. Remember this, that Tantra is not a philosophy, it's science, subjective science. The approach is scientific, non-philosophic, very down to earth, concerned with the immediate. The immediate is to be used as a door for the ultimate. The ultimate happens if you enter the immediate. It is there, and there is no other way to reach to it. Philosophy is not a way in the eyes of Tantra. It is a false way. It is only that this way. A door which is not, simply appears to be a door, a false door. The moment you try to enter it, you come to know that you not enter it. Just a painted door, there's no door in reality. Philosophy is a painted door. If you sit by its side and go on thinking and thinking, it is good. If you trend, it won't. So every philosophy is good to philosophize. To experience, every philosophy is important. That's why so much insistence on technique. In Tantra, so much insistence on technique. Because science can nothing be but technology. Whether of the outside world or of the inside. The very word Tantra means technique. The very word Tantra means technique. That's why in this small, but one of the greatest and deepest books, only techniques are given, no philosophy. Just 112 techniques to reach the ultimate through the image. The ninth technique, silently intone a word ending in ah. Then in the ha sound, effortlessly, the spontaneity. Silently intone a word ending in ah, any word that ends in ah. Intone it silently. Emphasis should be given to the ending, ah. Why? Because the moment this sound is intoned, ah, your breath goes out. You may not have observed, but now you can observe. Whenever your breath goes out, you are more silent. And whenever your breath comes in, you are more tense. Because the outgoing breath is death, and the incoming breath is life. Tension is part of life, not of death. Relaxation is part of death. Death means total relaxation. Life cannot be totally relaxed. It is impossible. Life means tension, effort. Only death is relaxed. So whenever a person becomes absolutely relaxed, he is both alive outwardly, dead within. You can see in the face of a Buddha, both life and death simultaneously. That's why so much silence and calm. They are part of death. Life is not relaxation. You relax in the night when you are asleep. That's why the old traditions say that death and sleep are similar. Sleep is a temporary death, and death is permanent sleep. That's why night relaxes you. It is the outgoing breath. The morning is the incoming breath. The day makes you tense and the night relaxes you. Light makes you tense, darkness relaxes you. That's why you cannot sleep when there is light. It is difficult to relax because light is similar to life. It is anti-death. Darkness is similar to death. It is pro-death. So darkness has a deep relaxation in it. And those who are afraid of darkness cannot relax. Impossible. Because every relaxation is dark. And darkness surrounds your life on both the sides. Before you are born, you are in darkness. When life ceases, you are again in darkness. Darkness is infinite. And this light and this life is just a moment in it. Just a wave arisen and then fallen back. If you can remember the darkness which surrounds both the ends, you will be relaxed here and now. Life, death, both are two sides of existence. The incoming breath is life. The outgoing breath is death. So it is not that you die someday. You are dying with every breath. That's why Hindus have been counting life in breaths. They don't count life in years. Tantra, yoga, all the old Indian systems, they count life in breaths. How many breaths you are going to live. So they say if you breathe very fast, too much breathing, you will die soon. If you breathe very slowly and your breaths are less, you will live long. And this is so. If you go and observe animals, those animals whose breathing is very slow live long. The elephant lives long. The breath is very slow. The dog, he dies soon. The breath is very fast. Whenever you find an animal, and any animal, the breath is fast, the animal will not have a longer life. A longer life is always with slow breath. Tantra and yoga and other Indian systems count your life in breaths. Really, with every breath you are born and with every breath you are dying. This mantra, this technique uses the outgoing breath as the method, the media, the vehicle to go deep in silence. It is a death method. Intone silently a word ending in ah. The breath has gone. That's why the word ending in ah. This ah is meaningful because it completely empties you. When you say ah, the whole breath has moved out. Nothing remains within. You are totally empty. empty and dead. For a single moment, for a very small interval, life has moved out of you. You are dead, empty. This emptiness, if realized, if you can become aware of it, will change you completely. You will be a different man. Then you know well that life is not your life and this death is also not your death. Then you know something which is beyond incoming, outgoing breath, witnessing soul. And this witnessing can happen easily when you are empty of breath, because life has subsided. With it, all tensions have subsided. Try it. It is a very beautiful method. But the ordinary process, the ordinary habit is, we emphasize the incoming breath, never the outgoing. We always take the breath. We always take it in. We never lose it out. We take it in and the body throws it out. Observe your breathing and you will know. We take the breath in. We never exhale, we only inhale. The exhaling is done by the body because we are afraid of death. That's the reason. If it was in our power, we will not exhale at all. We will inhale and then control it within. No one emphasizes exhaling. Inhaling is emphasized. Because we have to do exhaling to inhale. That's why we go on suffering it. We tolerate it. Because we cannot inhale without exhaling. So exhaling is accepted as a necessary evil. But basically, we are not interested in exhaling. And this is not only about breath. This is our whole attitude towards life. We cling to everything that comes to us. We will not leave it. This is the miserliness of the mind. And remember, there are many implications of it. If you are suffering from constipation, this will be the basic cause, that you always inhale and never exhale. The man who never exhales, just inhales, will suffer from constipation. The constipation is the other end of the same thing. He cannot exhale anything. He goes on accumulating. He is afraid. The fear is there. He can only accumulate. Then anything that is accumulated becomes poisonous. If you only inhale and don't exhale, your very breath will become poison to you. You will die because of it. You can turn a life-giving force into poison if you behave in a miserly way. Because exhaling is absolutely necessary. It is throwing all poisons out of you. So really, death is a purifying process and life is a poisoning process. This will look paradoxical. Life is a poisoning process because to live, you have to use many things. And the moment you have used them, they turn into poison. They are reduced in poison. You take a breath in, then you use oxygen, then the remaining becomes poison. It was life only because of oxygen, but you have used it. So life goes on changing everything into a poison. Now there is a great movement in the West, ecology. Man has been using everything and turning it into poison. And the very earth is just on the verge. Any day it can die. Because we have turned everything into poison. Death is a horrifying process. When your whole body has become poisonous, death will relieve you of body. It will renew you. It will give you a new birth. A new body will be given to you. Through that, all the accumulated poisons are dissolved back into nature. You are given a new mechanism. And this happens with every breath. The outgoing breath is similar to death. It takes poisons out. And when it is going out, everything ebbs within. And if you can throw the whole breath out, completely out, and no breath remains within, you touch a point of silence that can never be touched while the breath is in. Just like the ebb and tide, with every breath, a tide comes to you of life. With every exhale, everything ebbs. The tide has gone. You are just a vacant, empty source. This is the use of this technique. Silently intone a word ending in ah. Emphasize the exhaling breath. And you can use it for many changes in the mind. If you are suffering from constipation, forget intaking. Just exhale and don't inhale. Let the body do the work of inhaling. You just do the exhaling. You force the breath out and don't inhale. The body will inhale itself. You need not worry about it. You are not going to die. The body will take in. You just throw out and let the body take in. Your constipation will go. If you are suffering from a heart disease, just exhale, don't inhale. And you will not suffer from a heart disease. If just going upwards on a staircase or anywhere, you feel tired, very much tired, suffocated, breathless, simply do this. Just exhale, don't inhale. And then you can go to any amount of steps up and you will not be tired. What happens when you go to emphasis exhaling? You are ready to let go. You are ready to die. You are not afraid of death. That makes you open. Otherwise you are closed. Fear closes you. When you exhale, the whole system changes and accepts death. There is no fear. You are ready to die. And one who is ready to die can live. One who is ready to die really only can live. He alone becomes capable of life because he is not afraid. One who accepts death, welcomes it, receives it as a guest, lives with it, goes deep into life. Exhale, don't inhale, and that will change your total mind. Because of such simple techniques, Dana never appeals. Because we think my mind is such a complex thing. It is nothing complex, just foolish. And fools are very complex. A wise man is simple. Nothing is complex in your mind. It is a very simple mechanism. If you understand, you can change it very easily. For example, if you have not seen anybody dying, if you have been protected from seeing death, as Buddha was protected. Buddha's father was afraid. But some astrologer said that this boy is going to be a great sannyasin. He will renounce the world. So the father asked what is to be done to protect him from doing such a thing. So those astrologers thought, and then they concluded, and they said, don't allow him to see death. Because if he is not aware of death, he will never think of renouncing life. This is beautiful, very meaningful. That means all religion, all philosophy, all tantra and yoga is basically death-oriented. If you are aware of death, only then religion becomes meaningful. That's why no animal except man is religious, because no animal is aware of death. They die, but they are not aware. They cannot conceive, imagine that there is going to be death. When one dog dies, other dogs never imagine this is going to happen to them also. Always someone else dies. So how can a dog imagine that I am going to die? He has never seen himself dying. Someone else, some other dog dies. So how he can connect that I am going to die? No animal is aware of it. That's why no animal renounces. No animal can become a sannyasin. Only a very higher quality of consciousness can lead you to renounce, because when you become aware of death, and if even being a man you are not aware of death, you belong to the animal kingdom. You are not yet a man. You become man only when you encounter death. Otherwise there is no difference between you and the animal. Everything is similar, only death makes difference. With death encountered, you are no more an animal. Something has happened to you which never happens to an animal. Now you will be a different consciousness. So Buddha's father protected him from seeing any type of death, not only of man's death, of animals, even of a flower. So the gardeners were appointed not to allow the child to see a dead flower. A pale flower dying from the branch. A pale leaf, no. A dry leaf, no. Nowhere he should come to realize that something dies. He may infer by it that I am going to die. And you don't infer even seeing your wife dying, your mother, your father, your child. You weep for them, but you never conceive that this is a sign that I am going to die. But the astrologer said the boy is very, very sensitive. So protect him from any type of death. And the father was overconscious. He would not allow even an old man or old woman to be seen, because oldness is just death heard from a distance. Death is there from a distance, just coming. So Buddha's father will not allow any old man, old woman to be seen. If Buddha suddenly becomes aware that just by stopping the breath a man can die, it will be very difficult for him. That because no breath coming in, how a man can die? Life is such a big complex process. If you have not seen anyone dying, even you cannot conceive that just by stopping the breath, man will die. Just by stopping the breath, such a simple thing, and how such a complex life can die. The same is with this method, these methods. They look simple, but they touch basic reality. When breath is going out, when you are completely emptied of breath, you touch death just near it, and everything becomes calm and silent within you. Use it as a mantra. Whenever you feel tired, whenever you feel tense, use any word which ends in ah. Allah will do. Any word which brings your total breath out and you exhale completely and you are emptied of breath. The moment you are emptied of breath, you are emptied of life also. And all your problems belong to life. No problem belongs to death. Your anxiety, your anguish, your anger, your sadness, they all belong to life. Death is non-problematic. Death never gives any problem to anyone. And even if you think that I am afraid of death and that creates problem, that is not death creating problem, but your clinging to life. Only life creates problems. Death dissolves all problems. So when the breath has moved completely out, you are emptied of life. Look within in that moment when the breath is completely out. Before taking another breath in, go deep down in that interval and become aware of the inside calm, the silence. In that moment you are a Buddha. If you can catch that moment, you have known a taste of what Buddha might have known. And once known, you can detach this test from incoming, outgoing breath. Then the breath can go on coming in and out, and you can remain in that quality of consciousness that you have come to know. It is always there, one has just to discover it. And it is easy to discover when life is emptied out. Silently intone a word ending in ah, then in the ha, effortlessly, the spontaneity. And when the breath goes out, everything is emptied. Effortlessly, in this moment, there is no need to make any effort. Be spontaneity. Just be aware. Be spontaneous. Be sensitive. And realize this moment of death. In this moment, you are just near the door. Just near the door. Very, very near to the ultimate. The immediate has moved out. The superfluous has moved out. In this moment, you are not the wave, you are the ocean. Just near. Just near. If you can become aware, you will forget yourself that you are a wave. Again the wave will come, but now you can never be identified with it. You will remain the ocean. Once known that you are the ocean, you can never again be the wave. Life is waves. Death is the ocean. That's why Buddha so much insists about his nirvana as death-like. He never says you will get life immortal. He says you will simply die totally. Jesus speaks that come to me and I will give you life and life abundant. And Buddha says come to me to realize your death. I will give you death total. And both mean the same thing. But Buddha's terminology is more basic. But you will become afraid of it. That's why Buddha had no appeal in India. He was uprooted completely. And we go on calling that our land is a religious land. And the most religious person couldn't get roots here. What type of religious land is this? We have not produced another Buddha. Incomparable. And whenever the world thinks India to be religious, the world remembers Buddha. No one else. Because of Buddha, the India is thought to be religious. And what type of religious land is this? Buddha has no roots here, totally uprooted. He used the language of death, that is the cause. And Brahmins were using the language of life, Brahma. And he says Nirvana. Brahma means life, life, infinite life. And Nirvana means just cessation, death, total. Buddha says that your ordinary death is not total. You will be born again. It is not total. You will be born again. I will give you a total death and you will never be born again. A total death means no birth is possible. So this so-called death, Buddha says, is not death, just a rest period. You will become alive again. Just a breath gone out and you will take the breath in again. You will be reborn. Buddha says, I will give you the way that the breath will go out and will never come again. Total death, nirvana, cessation. We became afraid because we cling to life. But this is the paradox. The more you cling to life, the more you will die. And the more you are ready to die, then you become deathless. Then there is no possibility. Then no one can give you death if you accept it. Because through that acceptance, you become aware within you of something which is deathless. This coming breath and going breath, these are life and death of the body, not of me. But I don't know anything else than the body. I'm identified with the body. It will be difficult to be aware when the breath comes in. Easy to be aware when the breath goes out. When the breath is going out, for that moment you have become old, dying, emptied completely of the breath. You are dead for a moment. In the ha, effortlessly, the spontaneity. Try it. Any moment you can try it. Just riding in a bus, or traveling in a train, or moving to the office whenever you have time, intone a sound, Allah, any sound ending with Ah. This Allah helped too much Islam, not because of any Allah there in the sky, but because of this Ah. This word is beautiful. This word is beautiful. And then the more one goes using this word, Allah, Allah, it is reduced, then it remains La, La. Then it is reduced, then it remains Ha, Ha. It is good, but you can use any word that ends in Ah. Or just Ah will do. Have you observe that whenever you are tense, you will sigh, ah, and you will feel relaxed. Or whenever you are enjoyed, over-enjoyed, you will say, ah, and the whole breath will be thrown out, and you feel within a tranquility that you have never felt. Try this. When you are feeling very good, take the breath in and then try to feel. You cannot feel that well-being that comes with Aha. It is coming because of the breath. So languages differ, but these two things never differ. All over the world, whenever someone feels tired, he will say Aha. Really, he is saying for the death to come and relax. Whenever one feels overjoyed, blissful. He says, aha, this too. He is so overfilled with joy that he is not afraid of death now. He can relieve himself completely, relax completely. And what will happen if you go on trying it? You will become of something fully aware within you. The spontaneousness of your being, sahaj, spontaneous being, that you are already. But you are too much engaged with life, too much occupied with life. You cannot become aware of the being which is behind. When you are not occupied with life, with incoming breath, the being behind is revealed, a glimpse. But the glimpse will become by and by a realization. And once known, you cannot forget it. And this is not something which you are creating. That's why it's spontaneous. It is not something you are creating. It is there. You have simply forgotten. It is a remembrance. It is a rediscovery. Try to see children, very small children, taking their breaths. They take in a different way. Look at a child sleeping. His belly comes up and down, not the chest. If you are sleeping or you are being observed, your chest comes up and down. Your breath never goes up to the belly. The breath can go up to the belly only if you exhale and don't inhale. If you inhale and don't exhale, the breath cannot go up to the belly. And the reason is, when you exhale, the whole breath is thrown out. And then the body takes in. And the body takes only that amount which is needed. Never more, never less. The body has its own wisdom, and it is more wise than you. And don't disturb it. You can take more, then it will be disturbed. You can take less, then it will be disturbed. The body has its own wisdom. It takes that much amount which is needed. When more is needed, it creates the situation. When less is needed, it creates the situation. It never goes to the extreme. It is always balanced. But if you inhale, it is never balanced, because you don't know what you are doing. What is the need of the body? And the need changes every moment. Allow the body. You just exhale. You just throw out. And then the body will take, and will take it deeply, slowly. And the breath will go up to the belly. It will hit exactly the navel. And your belly will come up and down. If you inhale, then really you never exhale totally. And the breath is in, and you go on inhaling. So the breath which is already in will not allow your breath to go to the down to the very bottom. And you just shallow breathing happens. You go on intaking, and the poisonous breath is there, filled. They say you have 6,000 holes in your lungs, and only 2,000 are touched by your breath. The 4,000 are always filled with poisonous gases, which need to be exhaled. And those, that two-third portion of your chest, creates much anxiety. much anguish, misery in the mind, in the body. A child exhales, never inhales. Inhaling is done by the body itself. When a child is born, the first thing he is going to do is a cry. With that cry, his throat opens. With that cry, the first ah, the oxygen and the air that has been given by the mother is exhaled. This is his first effort with breathing. That's why if a child is not crying, then the doctors will become uneasy, because he has not shown the sign of life. He still feels dependent to the mother. He must cry. That cry shows that now he becomes an individual. Now the mother is not needed. He will take his own breath. And the first thing is, he is going to cry to exhale that which was given by the mother, and then his body will start functioning, inhaling. A child is always exhaling, and when the child starts inhaling, emphasis moves to inhaling, be aware, he has become already old. He has learned things from you. He has become tense. Whenever you are tense, you cannot take a deep breath. Why? Your stomach becomes rigid. Whenever you are tense, your stomach becomes rigid. It won't allow breath to go down. Then you have to take shallow breaths. Try with ah. It has a beautiful feeling around it. Whenever you feel tired, throw the breath. And make it a point to emphasize exhaling. You will be a different man, and a different mind will evolve. With the emphasis on in-breathing, you have developed a miser mind and a miser body. With exhaling, that miserliness will disappear. And with it, many problems. Possessiveness will disappear. So Tantra will not say leave possessiveness. Tantra says change your system of breathing. You cannot budget then. Order your own breathing and your moods, and you will become aware. Whatever is wrong is always associated with the emphasis which is given to the incoming breath. And whatsoever is good, virtuous, beautiful, truth is always associated with exhaling. Whenever you are speaking a lie, your breath, you will hold it in. Whenever you speak truth, you never hold the breath. The fear that I am speaking a lie, you hold the breath. You are afraid. Something may go out with it. The out-moving breath, your hidden truth may be revealed. You are afraid. Go on trying this more and more. You will be more healthy in body, more healthy in mind, and a different quality will develop. Calm, at ease, tranquility. 10th method, stopping ears by pressing and rectum by contracting, enter the sound. Stopping ears by pressing and rectum by contracting, enter the sound. We are not aware of our body even, and how our body functions, and what is its Tao? What is its way? But if you observe, then you can become very easily aware. If you stop your ears and pull your rectum back, contract your rectum, everything will stop for you, as if the whole world has become non-moving, as if everything has become static, stopped. Not only movements, time you will feel has stopped. What happens when you pull the rectum up, contract it? What happens? And when the ears are closed simultaneously, with closed ears, you will hear a sound within. But if the rectum is not pulled up, that sound is released by the rectum. That sound is very subtle. If the rectum is pulled back, contracted, and ears closed, you will see within you a pillar of sound. And that sound is of the silence. It is a negative sound. All sounds have ceased. And then you feel the sound of silence, or the sound of soundlessness. But it will be released from the rectum. So close the ears and pull the rectum up. Then you are closed from both the sides, and your body becomes closed and just filled with sound. This feeling of being filled with sound gives a deep fulfillment. So we will have to understand many things around it. Only then it will become possible for you to have the feeling what happens. We are not aware of the body. That is one of the basic problems of a seeker. And the society is against of being aware of the body, because society is afraid of the body. So we train every child not to be aware of the body. We make every child insensitive. We create a distance between the child's mind and the body, so he is not very much aware of the body. Because body awareness creates for the society. Because many things are implied. If the child is aware of the body, he will become aware of sex sooner or later. And if he is too much aware of the body, he will feel too much sexual, sensuous. So we have to kill the very root. He should be made dull about his body, insensitive. So he never feels it. You don't feel your body, you feel it only when something wrong happens. Something goes wrong. You have a headache in the head, then you feel your head. Some thorn is there, then you feel your leg, your feet. When your body aches, you feel that you have a body. Only when something goes wrong, and that too not very soon, you are never aware of your diseases. Immediately, you become aware only when a period has passed, and when it goes on knocking at your consciousness that I am here, only then you become aware. So no one goes to the doctor really in time. Everyone reaches late when the disease has entered deep and it has done much wrong. If a child is grown up with sensitiveness, he will become aware of the disease even before the disease happens. And now they are working in Russia particularly, that a disease can be known if someone is very deeply sensitive about his body, even 6 months before of its happening. Because subtle changes start. They prepare the body for the disease. The impact is felt even 6 months before. But what of disease? We never became become aware even of death. If you are going to die tomorrow, you are not aware even today. A thing like death, next moment, and you are not aware this moment, you are totally dead to your body, insensitive. This whole society, the whole culture up to now, because it has been against body, creates this dullness, deadness. You are not allowed to feel it. Only in accidents you can be pardoned, forgiven, to be aware of it. Otherwise, don't be aware of the body. This creates many problems, particularly for Tantra, because Tantra believes in deep sensitivity and knowledge of the body. You go on, move on, and your body goes on doing many things, and you are unaware. Now much work is being done on body language. The body has its own language. And particularly psychiatrists and psychologists and psychoanalysts are being trained for body language, because they say, you can't believe the modern man. Whatsoever he says can't be believed. You rather observe his body. That will give you a more true clue. A man enters in a psychiatrist's office. The old secretary, psychoanalyst Freudian, will talk and talk with the man to bring out whatever is hidden in his mind. Modern secretary will observe his body, because that gives clues. If a man is egoist, if ego is his problem, he stands in a different way than a whole man. His neck has a different angle than a humble man. His spine is not flexible, dead, fixed. He looks wooden, not alive. If you touch his body, it has a wooden feeling, not the warmth of a living body. A soldier just moving to the front. Look at the soldier moving to the front. He has a wooden shape, wooden feeling. And that is needed by a soldier, because he is going to die or to kill. He must not be much aware of the body. His whole training is to create a wooden body. Soldiers marching look like toys, dead toys marching. If you are humble, you have different body. You sit differently. You stand differently. If you feel inferior, you stand differently. If you feel superior, you stand differently. If you are always in fear, you stand in such a way as if you are protecting yourself from some unknown force. That is always there. If you are not afraid, you are just like a child playing with his mother, no fears. Wherever you go, you are unafraid, at home with the universe around you. The man who is afraid is armed. And when I say armored, it is not only symbolically, physiologically he is armored. Wilhelm Reich was working very much on body structure. And he came to realize deep associations. If a man is afraid, his stomach is not flexible. You touch his stomach, it is like stone. If he becomes fearless, his stomach relaxes immediately. Or you relax the stomach and the fear disappears. Mask the stomach to relax, and he will feel more fearless, less afraid. A person who is loving has a different quality of body and warmth. Exactly, he is warm. person who is not loving is cold. Exactly. Physiologically he is cold. These and other things, they have moved into your body and they have become barriers. They don't allow you to know about your body. But the body goes on working in its own way. And you go on working in your own way. A rift is created. That rift has to be broken. I have seen, if someone is suppressive, if you have suppressed your anger, your fingers, your hands have the sensation of a suppressed anger. And a person who knows how to feel it just by touching your hand can feel that you have suppressed anger. And why in the hand? Because anger has to be released by hand. If you have suppressed anger, then in your teeth, in your gums, it is suppressed. And it can be felt by touching. It gives a vibration that I am suppressed here. If you have suppressed sex, then in your erotic zones, it is there. If a person has suppressed sex, then touch his erotic zone and you can feel any erotic zone touched. If suppressed sex is there, the zone will become afraid. It will withdraw your touch. It will not be open. Because the person inside is withdrawing. The part of the body will withdraw. It will not allow you opening. Now they say that 50% women are frigid. And the reason is because we teach girls to be more suppressive than boys. So they have suppressed. And when a girl suppresses her sexual feelings up to the age of 20, it has become a long habit, 20 years habit of suppression. And when she will love, she will talk about love, but her body will not be open. The body will be closed. And then a diametrically opposite phenomena happens. Two currents opposing each other. She wants to love, but her body is repressed. Body withdraws. It is not ready to come closer. If you see a woman sitting with a man, the woman loves to the man, she will be reclining towards him. Just the body will be reclining. If they are sitting on a sofa, that both bodies will be reclining to each other. They are not aware. But you can see, if the woman is afraid of the man, her body will be reclining to the opposite. If a woman loves a man, she will never cross her legs sitting by him. If he is afraid of the man, she will cross her legs. She is not aware, this is not done consciously. Body armor. Body protects itself, works in its own way. Tantra became aware of this phenomena. First awareness of such deep body feeling sensitivity was of Tantra. And Tantra says, if you can use your body consciously, the body becomes the vehicle to move to the spirit. So Tantra says it is foolish, absolutely idiotic to be against the body. Use it. It is a vehicle. Use its energy in such a way that you can go beyond it. Now, stopping ears by pressing and rectum by contracting, enter the sound. You have been doing many times contracting the rectum. And sometimes the rectum is released even without your consciousness. If you suddenly become afraid, the rectum is released. You may defecate in fear. You may urinate in fear. You cannot control. If sudden fear grips you, your bladder will relax. Your rectum will relax. What happens? In fear, what happens? Fear is a mental thing. And why? Why you urinate in fear? What the control is lost. There must be some deep root connecting. Fear happens in the head, in the mind. When you are unafraid, this never happens. The child really has no mental control over his body. No animal controls his urine, bladder, or anything. Whenever bladder is full, it is released. No animal controls it, but man has to control it of necessity. So we force a child to control when he is to go to the bath and when not, and when he has to control, we give timings. So the mind takes over the control of a function which is non-voluntary. That's why it's so much difficult to train the child for a toilet. And now psychologists say, if we leave toilet training, humanity will very much improve. Toilet training is the first repression of the child, its nature is unity. But it seems difficult that we can hear to these psychologists. We cannot listen to them because then the children will create many problems. We have to train them of necessity. Only a very, very rich, affluent society will be able not to bother. Poor societies have to manage. We cannot afford it. If the child urinates anywhere, we cannot afford it. He urinates on the sofa, we cannot afford it, so we have to train. This training is mental. Body has really no built-in program for it. Body has no built-in program for it. Man is animal as far as body is concerned. And body knows no culture, no society. That's why when you are in deep fear, the control mechanism that you have imposed on the body is relaxed. You are not in control, you are thrown off control. You can control only in normal conditions. In emergencies, you cannot control. Because for emergencies, you have never been trained. You have only been trained for normal, day-to-day, routine world. Emergency, the control is lost. Your body starts functioning in its own animal way. But one relationship can be understood. The fearless man, with a fearless man, this will never happen. So this has become a sign of a coward. If in fear you urinate or defecate, this shows you are a coward. A fearless man will not behave in this way. Because a fearless man is taking deep breaths. His body and his breathing system are related. There is no gap. With a coward man, there is a gap. And because of that gap, he is always overburdened with urine and defecation. So whenever emergency comes, that overburdenedness has to be thrown. He has to be unburdened. And it has a reason in nature. Then you can, a coward, unburdened, stomach relaxed can escape more easily, can run more easily. Burdened stomach will become a hindrance. It is helpful for a coward to be relaxed. Why I am saying about this, I am just saying this, that you have to be aware of your mental processes, your stomach processes. They are depleted. Psychologists say that your 50 to 90% dreams are because of your stomach processes. If you have taken a very heavy meal, you are bound to see nightmares. They are not related with the mind. Just the heavy stomach creates them. Many dreams can be created by outside tricks. If you are risking, your hands can be crossed on your chest and immediately you are in some nightmare. Just a pillow can be put on your chest and you will dream that some demon is sitting on your chest, just going to kill you. And this has been one of the problems. Why? Such a small weight of a pillow. If you are awake, there is no weight. You don't feel anything heavy. But a small pillow in the night when you are sleeping, why is felt so heavy that you have been burdened with a big stone or a rock? Why? So much weight is felt. And the reason is this. When you are aware, when you are awake, your mind and body are not related. The gap is there. You cannot feel the body and its sensitivity. While asleep, the control, culture, conditioning dissolves. You have again become a child and your body is so sensitive. Because of that sensitivity, a small pillow is felt as a rock, magnified because of sensitivity. The sensitivity magnifies it. Body-mind processes are deeply related. And if you know what happens with what, you can use them. Rem closed, pulled upwards, contracted, creates a situation in the body in which if sound is present, it can be felt. And you will feel a pillar of sound, of silence, a closed space within your body. Close the ears and pull the rectum and then just remain what is happening inside you. Just remain in that vacant state which is created by these two things. Your life energy is moving within and it has no way to go out. Sound goes out either from your ears or from your rectum. Those are the two doors for the sound to move out. If it is not moving out, you can feel it more easily. And what will happen when you feel this inner sound? The very phenomena of hearing the inner sound, your thoughts dissolve. Just try any time in the day. Just pull the rectum and put your fingers on the ears, press and pull the rectum. You will feel your mind has stopped. It is not functioning. Thoughts have stopped. That constant flow of thoughts is not there. It is good. And if one goes on doing it, wherever you arrive, in the day if you can do it, 4, 5, 6 times, within 3 or 4 months, you will become expert in it. And then such a well-being flows out of it. And the inner sound once heard remains with you. Then you can hear it the whole day. The market is noisy, the road is noisy, the traffic is noisy. Even in that noise, you have heard the inner sound. You will feel it. the still small voice that goes on inside, and then nothing will disturb you. If you can feel inner sound, then nothing can disturb you from the outside. You remain silent whatsoever happens around you. It makes no difference. The last. Enter the sound of your name and throw this sound all sounds. Enter the sound of your name and throw this sound all sounds. Your own name can be used as a mantra very easily. And it is very helpful because your name has gone very deep into your unconscious. Nothing else has gone so deep. If we are here sitting and we all fall down into a sleep, and someone comes and calls Ram, no one will listen. Only the person whose name is Ram will listen it. He will be disturbed in his sleep. No one listens to the sound Ram. But why this man listens? It has gone down deep. It is not conscious now. It has become unconscious. Your name has gone very deep within you. But there is a beautiful phenomena about your name. You never take it. Others take it. Others use it. You never use it. I have heard about addition, that in the First World War, for the first time in America, rationing was made. And addition, of course, a great scientist, but was very poor. So he had to stand for his ration card in the queue. And he was such a great man that no one ever used his name before him. There is no need to use his name for himself, and no one will use his name. He was so respected. So everyone will call him Professor. So he has forgotten what is his name. He was standing in the queue, and when his name was called, that who is Thomas Alva Edison, he just stared blank. Again the name was called, then someone who was a neighbor to Edison told him that, why are you staring? The name is being called. It is your name, Professor. Then he became aware. He said, but how can I recognize? No one calls me Edison. It is so long. They just call me Professor. You never use your own name. Only others use it. You have heard it used by others. But it has gone deep. Very deep. It has penetrated like an arrow into your unconscious. If you yourself use it, then it becomes a mantra. And for two reasons it is. When you take your name, if your name is Ram, and use Ram, 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 suddenly you feel as you are taking someone else's name. It is not yours. Or if you feel this is yours, you feel a self-entirety within you with using it. It may belong to the body, it may belong to the mind. But who is calling us? You have always called others' names. When you call your own name, it looks as if it looks to someone else, not to you. And it is a very living phenomenon. You can become a witness to your own name. And with the name, your whole life is involved. Separated from the name, you separated from your whole life. And this name has penetrated deep within you because everyone has called your birth. You have heard this. Use this sound. With this sound you can go to the very depth the name has gone. In the old days, we gave everyone the name of God. Everyone. Someone was Ram, someone was Narayan, someone was Krishna, someone was Vishnu, or something. Say, all the Mohammedan names are the names of God. All the Mohammedans' names are the names of God. And all over the world that was the practice. to give a name which is really the name of the God. For two reasons. The one reason is this technique. Because your own name can be used as a mantra, then it will serve you a double purpose. It will be your name. You have heard it so many times, all your life. It has penetrated deep, and because it is also the name of God. Go on repeating inside. Suddenly you will become aware, this name is different from me. And then by and by, this name will have a sanctity of its own. You will remember any day, Narayan, Ram, this is God's name. Your name has turned into mantra. This is very good. You can try with your name many things. If you want to be awake in the morning at 5 o'clock, no alarm is so exact as your own name. Just repeat twice inside the term, you have to be awake by 5 o'clock sharp, 3 times, and just fall down into sleep. You will be awakened at 5 o'clock. Because Ram, your name is very deep in the unconscious. Call your name and tell that at 5 o'clock in the morning, let me be awake. Someone will awake you. And if you continue this practice, one day you will suddenly realize that at 5 o'clock, someone calls Ram, be awake. That is your unconscious calling you. This technique says, enter the sound of your name and through this sound all sounds. Your name becomes just a door for all names. But enter the sound. First, when you repeat Ram, 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 it is a word. It means something. When you go on repeating Ram, 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 you must have heard the story of Valmiki. He was given this mantra Ram. He was an ignorant man, uneducated. Simple, innocent, childlike. So he started Ram, 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 but he was repeating so much, he forgot completely and reversed the whole thing. He was chanting Mara, Mara, Mara. Ram, 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 chanting so fast, it became Mara, Mara, Mara. And he achieved the goal through Mara, Mara, Mara. If you go repeating the name, fast inside, so it will not be a word, it will become a sound, just meaningless. And then there is no difference between Ram and Mara, no difference. Whether you call Mara or Ram makes no sense. They are not words, just the sound, just the sound. Enter the sound of your name, so forget the meaning of it. Just enter the sound. Meaning is with the mind. Sound is with the body. Meaning is in the head. Sound spreads all over the body. So forget the meaning. Just repeat it as meaningless sound. And throw this sound on sounds. And then this sound will become the door to all sounds. And all sounds means all that exists. This is one of the basic tenets of Indian inner search, that the basic unit of existence is sound and not electricity. Modern science says the basic unit of existence is electricity, not sound. But they also say sound is a form of electricity. And Indians have always been saying that electricity is nothing but a form of sound. You may have heard that a particular rock, a particular sound, fire can be created. It can be created. Because this is the Indian idea that sound is the basis of all electricity. So if you hit sound in a particular frequency, electricity will be created. on long bridges, if military is passing, they are not allowed to march. Because many times it happens that because of their march, the bridge falls. Some, not because of their weight, because they will be passing anyhow. But if they pass in march, then the particular sound of their feet breaks the bridge. In old Hebrew history, the city of Jericho was very protected by great walls. And it was impossible to break those walls. But by a sound, the city was broken. And that sound was the secret of those walls. If that sound was before walls, the walls will give way. You have heard the story of Ali Baba. A particular sound, and the rock moves. These are allegories. Just whether they are right or not, one thing is certain. If you can create a particular sound so continuously that meaning is lost, mind is lost, the rock at your heart will be removed. Enough for today.